The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
And well, the papers this morning are full of the machinations of government formation. Who's going to match up with whom? Who has the power? Who's going to fold and who will come out on top? At the end of the day, it's all about compromise. Shortly, we'll be joined by two experts in this area. But first, Orla McMenamin has been finding out, what would you be unwilling to compromise over?
I won't accept drama.
Watching football. I have to watch football. Football takes precedence over everything.
If my partner didn't like dogs, I would break up with them.
How much you spent? The location of where we're going to live. I suppose I said that I wouldn't compromise on that, so I'd have my support networks around me.
I think honesty.
The foundation of any relationship is meals together. So if they can't appreciate like the types of food you want to eat, if they'd rather just like get a takeout or a freezer meal instead of like cooking something delicious, then I would say no.
Well, we're joined by Sabina Walsh from the Mediator Academy and Louise Campbell, Managing Director at Robert Walters Recruitment Ireland. And we're talking about compromise. Sabina, we're talking about, I suppose, ultimately from the government point of view and party politics, negotiation. Going into negotiations in general, whether it's in the corporate world or dispute world or political world, is it okay to have red lines?
I wouldn't suggest that as the optimum negotiation strategy. I think what is important is to know, of course, what's important to you, what your interests are, what you're really there to achieve, but also to think a little bit creatively about how that might be achieved. And I think hammering out red lines before you ever talk to and particularly listen to your counterpart is not necessarily keeping the door as open as it could be to creative solutions.
So what's the alternative then to that? What should you do? Because inevitably we have red lines, don't we, in a discussion or a negotiation?
Well, it depends on how you define a red line. We have things that are important to us, things that maybe we can't give up on, or we can't, lines we can't cross. But there are so many different ways in achieving the outcomes that we want, that really the first thing we need to do, which is kind of counterintuitive when you're going into a negotiation, is actually to ask questions and to listen. We have a tendency, and I think the discussions and the debates over the past couple of weeks have shown this, to go in and do a lot of telling and to try to manage a negotiation by talking about what it is we want and why what we want is better, more important, more useful, and the only way to go, instead of actually asking a few questions and finding out, well, what do they want? What is it that they want that might not be that different, in fact, to what we want?
And try and find some common ground. Louise Campbell, one of the things when you mention compromise, particularly in the corporate world, is it is a value that people admire from a distance, but nobody wants to be known as a compromise. So you say, Richard Curran, oh, he's a great chief executive. He's really good at compromise.
Well,
I think that gives
the impression that you lose all the time, which is what you don't want. And I think what you want when you are compromising is that you win sometimes, you lose sometimes, but it's all about meeting in the middle. And I think that, you know, leadership and conflict and compromise go hand in hand. You know, leadership is a full contact sport. And if you cannot or will not address conflict and compromise accordingly in a healthy manner, it's going to, you know, not serve you well for the future. I think, Richard, when you come to looking at compromise from a career standpoint, it's something that you've got to get really comfortable with. But you've also got to think about how much do you actually compromise? What are you being asked to do? Has the situation arisen before? Are you going to, as you said, Sabina, keep your integrity throughout the process? And then you've got to know when to walk away.
Well, what do you mean keep your integrity throughout the process? In other words, sort of stick with what's realistically attainable and
sticking with your core beliefs. I mean, if you're working in an organisation, hopefully you are there, you know, under the umbrella that all employees are working towards a common goal and you're all working towards the benefit of you know, what one aim and the benefit of the organisation. Now, if you're in an environment where people are working towards different goals and there is no galvanisation of that, chaos ensues. And then you might be asked to compromise on your integrity. You might be asked to sell a product that you know is faulty. You might be asked to sell something to someone who can't afford it. And there's some things you just should not compromise on.
Sabina, when you get into the nuts and bolts, and you would see this all the time, of discussion, of negotiation, of compromise, should you outline, this is what we want to do, and the other side says this is what we want to do, or should you actually put forward lots of suggestions, a menu of options?
I would do both, actually. I think rather than talk about compromise, I think a better way to talk about it is about collaboration, actually. So compromising tends to give the idea of sort of each side giving a little. But when you're collaborating, you're trying to find out ways that each side can actually get the bulk of what it is they want. And so in order to do that, each side needs to know what the other wants. But then, as you say, to look at all the options, put all the options on the table. We tend to have a very binary way of looking at things. I want this, but I don't want that. You're right, I'm wrong, or the other way around. And a better way can be to just consider every option, put them all on the table and look at them. And sometimes out of that, solutions appear that we might not have ever considered before because we haven't put our heads together with our opposite number.
But is it the case, Louise, you think that in a discussion or a negotiation that doing your research to find out as much as you can about the other side and to where they might be comfortable is a good thing to do? Or is that fundamentally mistrustful from the very start?
I think there's a little bit of both, but I think knowledge is power. And I think that you need to understand when you are entering into a compromise agreement or a collaboration agreement, you know, the significance of it, the relevance of it, what's your personal investment into it. And then I think you need to really, as Sabina said, listen to uncover what the other side's needs are. And, you know, sometimes a really powerful thing to do is to say, what do you want to get out of this? What does good look like to you? Mm-hmm. What do you think you can accept? Because sometimes what people talk about and what they actually want can be different things. And you might realise that, you know, and it's all about knowledge and educating yourself, that by finding out what the other side is looking for, it might be much more closely aligned to what you're looking for than you think.
But in the realm of politics, and I think it probably applies to a certain extent in the corporate world as well, the outcome of a negotiation and a compromise that must be reached, how it will play afterwards, how it's going to look for us, plays a big part. And if you take examples, whether it's, for example, US President Donald Trump on trade wars, he will find something that he says he has secured. And it's almost as if the perception is more important than what's actually in the overall package.
Well, I think what that reveals actually is the principal player's main interests. And in that case, and in that individual's case, I think the main interest that is driving all his actions is his own self-interest in terms of retaining power, being re-elected. It's something that politicians, I guess, struggle with because they all want to be re-elected, and yet they have to make decisions that sometimes will result in that not happening. So I think for them, they need to be very clear. Are they there for their own political careers, or are they there to do what they've promised us to do and to, you know, make society and the country a better place for us? And if that's their driving interest, that should be guiding all their negotiations.
But inevitably, it will happen in politics, or it'll happen, let's say, in industrial relations, where you might have the bosses or on the other side, the trade union leaders, who have their own view about what's reasonable and rational and fair in this situation. Yeah. But they'll think that's not going to play well with our members, or if it's the boss, that's not going to wash with the investors. I'm just going to look bad here.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, looking bad, I think chief negotiators need to leave their egos outside the door, and focus on what's important for their constituents, be they the members of their union, the members of the country, or, you know, in a business case, their team. You know, negotiation can't be about ego and personality, because if that's the case, the only person whose interests are going to be met are your own. So, you know, the people doing the negotiations here have to put their own stuff aside and their own desire to look good aside in favour of bringing about the right result.
Louise, any male-female dimension to this? Do you think women are more or less likely, or men are more or less likely to compromise?
Interesting. No, I wouldn't say there's much of a difference. Not in the men and women that I've met recently. What I would say, though, to that, Richard, is that, you know, from a CEO standpoint, that conflict and resolution of this can be a huge opportunity within a corporate environment to galvanise people and to bring them together. And I think any CEO, you know, as Sabina said, has to take their ego out of the equation and to look at an organisation from other people's viewpoints. And it can be a really, really great learning opportunity.
So don't focus on what we didn't get. But we'll have to see how it all plays out in government negotiations in the weeks ahead. Sabina Walsh and Louise Campbell, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.